irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Razza Riffs with Keith Razza and Alan Lee, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Hello out there in Radio Land. This is Alan Lee for Razza Riffs, and my partner, the one and only Keith Razza, the Razza part of Razza Riffs, is not here tonight. He's at the Brea Improv performing his heart out. And good luck to him this evening. Waiting on the line desperately is the one and only my guest tonight, fantastic guest, the amazing Ron Lynch, ladies and gentlemen. I've read some things about him just recently.
That you didn't know.
That I didn't know at all. He is known as one of the four fathers of alternative comedy. Can you believe that? And so, as you can hear him, welcome to the show, Senor Lynch.
Thank you. Well, that is true. There's only four of us.
Yes, yes.
And
including the audience included, of course. But
yes,
we'll manage to come up with something, I know. So, how are you doing this evening, sir? And so glad to have you.
Good. Is this okay? I'm on a speakerphone.
Oh, you sound.
Does that work?
It must be high tech. It sounds wonderful. It sounds just like
oh,
I
good.
Know. You sound when I attend your shows. You know, I was. I really want to help you plug the Tomorrow Show because I enjoy it so much. And you've said that Nana the Cat will be returning. If I'm
yes.
correct, good. And
yeah, she's there this Saturday, actually.
Oh my! You're getting me excited. Because it's BYOB, and this is an amazing thing that he makes the announcement for a show on Saturday at midnight, ladies and gentlemen, at the Steve Allen Theater. And since Nana the Cat is going to be there, I'm going to be very careful that I just bring half of the BYOB with me.
Which would be BY?
BY, just by. Oh, jeez. That's perfect for Nana the Catwoman.
Yeah, so he'll bring you.
Just me. Anyway, Ron, I heard you were a single man. Did I get that right?
That is incorrect.
Oh, I'm sorry. No,
that's simply an affront.
Oh, I'm sorry about that. Because I am a single man, and I'm still dating myself. It's a lot of fun out there dating
yes.
myself, taking myself out here and there. So, this is the pat question. I thought I wouldn't ask you that, but here I go. How did you get started in comedy? Gee, that's an amazing question.
Well, it's always that type of question is always weird because people like kind of ramp up to what they're going to do in comedy, I think.
Sure.
And people, you know, there's also the sad story of people saying, well, I was partying around my friends, and that's how I started doing it. But then it winds up their friends were just being kind.
Yeah, that's
but, you know, you started in high school just making goofy tapes and stuff that, of course, if I listen to now, I would think were the stupidest things ever. And then in college, it was hard to get a radio show. I was upstate New York, Binghamton, New York, and the best way to get one would be pairing up with somebody, and I paired up with a friend of mine from Long Island that I went to high school with. And we did a show together. We started doing sketches, and then the craziest thing is we did a live show of our sketches in one of the dorms, and it was 2 hours long, which is insane. It was 2 hours of sketches and stuff and just goofing around, and everyone stayed there because there was really nothing else to do, I guess.
That's a long, long
time. Probably that's the start of the bug that I got.
Oh, great. And it was
then the two of us were in a comedy team for probably 8 years after that.
Wow, 8 years. Fantastic.
Yeah, this is back when there were more comedy teams or duos. And a lot of people would start out in a comedy team just to, you know, feel comfortable on stage because it was always the other guy. And then they would break up after a while.
So these teams,
yeah.
These teams could be like a tag team. Like in wrestling. They would just
No.
It was quite like that.
Two of you would be you would be performing together, doing sketches and and talking together and stuff. Yeah.
And this was like long form, because you said it was a 2-hour show. I thought it's interesting that you brought that up for the audience out there.
Well, it's funny you're talking in improv terms, but this was just sketches that we used to do on the radio.
Ah.
And we did them live.
Ah.
There was no improv really involved except in between things and us talking.
Mm-hmm.
There was no improv in the sense that we got suggestions from the audience or anything, no.
No, that's true. It'd be a little hard on a radio show, I guess, to open it up to that type of...
Well, yeah. I mean, you do improvise when you're doing a radio show.
Sure.
But our performance was never improvised, really.
Yeah, yeah.
Except, you know, you have a framework. Sometimes you have a framework for something you're going to do, and you simply become those characters and use that framework to get from A to B or to C, and you end the sketch that way, you know.
Yeah, and there's characters and voices that you do and have done on a number of shows. Bob's Burgers, Adventure Time, Dr. Katz, Tim and Eric, Home Movies, and animation stuff, animation voices you've done.
Oh, yeah, I love it. That's the best gig ever. It's really fun. And most of those cartoons I'm recording with people that I either know pretty well or I really like. And, it's always fun to do it. I just recently did a voice on a cartoon called Star and the... Star... and the Forces of Evil. It's a new Disney kids cartoon. And it was just me in the booth. And I didn't know anybody there. So it was really interesting not being that comfortable doing it. But it was really fun.
So you went in and did this. That sounds wonderful. It's a Disney feature.
It's not a feature. It's a cartoon that's on their channel, I think. I don't really know. I know it's a Disney produced cartoon, kids cartoon.
Star?
It's not a movie.
Wow, that sounds like the whole comic book thing has taken off. Star Boy, and the what evil? The voice.
It's just Star versus the Forces of Evil. I think it's called.
Oh.
It's something like that. Whoever wrote it is going to kill me. But it's basically the star. It's a really absurd cartoon in a way, because it's about a wand that produces spells that fights off evil. And this one cartoon I did was a change from the normal cartoon in that they went inside the wand to meet the characters inside the wand that caused the spells. And I played a... I played a narwhal, like a sailor narwhal character, who his power was narwhal blast, and he could run himself into other characters, which didn't make sense to me because a narwhal has that big pointy thing on the front. He would probably be killing them immediately.
That could hurt. But pain is an interesting thing in cartoons. But it was a magic wand, you say, and talking about magic, I know you have some background in that as well, and I have seen some of your magic. I like it. It's very good. And now, are you part of the magic world, the magician world?
No, not really. I mean, I do kind of a parody of magic, and there's only really a couple of real magic things involved. And it's all, I don't know how to describe it. It's really just making fun of magic. And the funny thing is, I had the opportunity of performing at the Magic Castle, which usually doesn't appreciate that kind of comedy magic. They like, if it's comedy magic, they like real magic involved. And my stuff was just making fun of that, really. But I had the opportunity of performing in the big room at the Magic Castle for a week, and that was like one of the highlights of my career.
Oh, that's fantastic. You know, I've been there twice, and now it's like a private invite and all this, and quite a buffet. I remember they really served a you know, quite a scrumptious and grandiose buffet. It was amazing, and the food.
Oh, the buffet. You're talking about Sunday.
Sunday. It was, right? Sunday. Yes, sir. It was indeed.
Yeah, the breakfast buffet on Sunday is insane there.
Oh.
You
know, you're so.
And I lucked out because a magician who is a great magician who works there knows me, and he does my show on Saturday sometimes, and he asked me to do this show with him and help write the show, and it was pretty fun.
Oh,
three of us, John Carney, Rob Zabrecki, and I played three ghosts of the castle, and this is around Halloween time. And we had, like, ghost outfits in the beginning, and we played music together, and then we had a slideshow where you find out we all died on the Hindenburg. It was really fun. Really fun show.
Oh, that sounds funny. Death on the Hindenburg as a ghost.
Yeah.
Mike, you could transfer that over to the Queen Mary. And
I love the Queen Mary.
You know what? I haven't been over there, and someone mentioned ghosts. They have this whole ghost thing there, and that's why I mentioned that. And did you get on Howard Hughes' the Spruce Goose when it was parked over there some time ago?
No, I didn't. I remember that. Yeah, no, I didn't get to see it.
Yeah, that's incredible. And that whole era is incredible. And it's the whole Houdini history of magic in the United States is all tied into that, the ghosts and seances and all that. And
by the way, they have some interesting tours and stuff on that boat, and I've stayed in a room there a couple of times, and it's just great. It's really fun.
No ghosts.
No ghosts. Didn't see any ghosts.
Yeah, see that. I want to see a ghost.
Or maybe I did.
Well, you know, it's funny talking about ghosts, and I listened to that late night. Is it Nouri, the guy that talks about aliens? Late night, George Nouri.
I do not know.
Oh, really? It comes on like 11 o'clock on, I think, AM radio. Anyway, he has all the people come on and talk about aliens.
Oh yeah. I know what you mean.
And
I didn't know he was radio, but yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah, and I always find it funny because I just have always had a hard time believing. I mean, I love science fiction and so forth, but the extraterrestrial thing always was, you know, it just pushed me just a bit. And but I can't wait to meet one. And who knows? They may be doing comedy, and we don't even know it. But so anyway, I was going to ask you. You have some run-ins with Louis C.K. He's a friend of yours. Any little anecdotes about Louis C.K. or anyone else for that? I know you know Mark Maron, who I have met, and
Mark and I've known Mark for a while. I don't really see much of him anymore. I haven't seen him since I did his show, I think, a long time ago. We're two extremes of the comedy world in a way. But Mark was in Boston with me when we started out. And as far as Louis goes, I've known Louis forever. And I gave him, theoretically, gave him his first gig doing stand-up, but he actually had done it 6 months earlier and gave up.
Really?
And then decided to come back into it. And I was running a little club in Cambridge, in Central Square in Cambridge, Massachusetts. And the space was a little movie theater that had tables and chairs, little round tables and chairs, and they would serve coffee and cake and stuff, and they would show the weirdest movies. And I saw the guy at a party one night and talked to him into doing a midnight show on a Saturday, which is what I'm doing now, but he did a midnight show called Comedy Clubhouse. And Louis came up to me after a show and he said, hi, I'd like to perform on the show. How do I do that? And I said, well, if you can get me a tape of you performing or something, just to show me what you have and what you do.
Yeah.
And we'll think about it. So the next week he comes back, he gives me a cassette tape and I listen to it. And when I listen to it, I hear, I wish I had two glasses with me right now, but I hear glasses constantly clinking, him doing jokes with a lot of echo, and I hear like four laughs that are like overdubbed, and I can kind of tell that happened. It's like, like really big, ridiculous laughs for every joke.
Sure.
And he's obviously trying to make me think he was in a comedy club. Like he produced a tape of his jokes because he had no tape of him being in a comedy club.
Oh, that's
he just
funny.
Made it up. And he's still the producer to this day, but he gave me the tape. And he came back the next week and he said, did you listen to the tape? And I said, yeah, did you expect me to think you were in a comedy club? And his face kind of drops. And he went, yeah. I went, all right, you're on third. Well, it was basically that. Because it was a crappy little club. There was no pressure or anything.
Sure.
I think if the tape was bad, I still would have put them up.
Sure, that's funny.
Anybody that goes to trouble to try to get a gig, you know? And I have a show every now and then on my show, which is just 5 minutes, and that's the show that I put people on that really want to do the show, or they want to do the show for the first time or whatever, and they can't do more than 5 minutes because the mic and the lights go out immediately in five minutes, which is actually a pretty fun show. It's actually really fun.
Well, that sounds like a great show.
Because comics try to go right up to the light. They try to go right up to the thing being shut off. And
yeah.
If it goes off before their last punchline, it's really tragic.
Well, that's funny.
Because they're laughing at that, but it is funny.
It is funny. 30 seconds, and they over Tokyo. They say, no, we're going to go all the way to the end and beyond, and bam, the light. It goes off.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So, yes, yeah, so I've known Louis ever since then. We made a couple of short movies together, and he's let me stay at his apartment in New York, which is insane. He just, you know, he sold his own tickets online not for a live concert. He sold a one-hour special that he made at a theater, put it online for $5 without no middleman at all. And he made, like, overnight, he made $1 million.
Wow.
That's a very simplistic way of describing the story, but he made a ton of money.
Wow.
He was really smart. He's a super smart guy.
No, I get that.
And he bought a brownstone building in New York City.
Nice.
Which is unheard of.
That is nice. A brownstone is a couple of shekels there involved.
Yes.
You know, it's funny. You just said that he did that virtual comedy club with you and you caught him. And then it's funny. He kind of does it again online and sells tickets it's a real comedy, but it's sort of like a concept there. You know, he tried it with you and you guessed that he wasn't in the club. And then he says, well, I'll do it again online and sell tickets and I'll be, you know, the audience will see me and I'll be online. It's kind of like a virtual, you know, here I am again.
Right. And of course this is eons later. And it's a real show that he's selling, so it's similar, but it's definitely not the same thing.
Yeah, it's a little bit different. I see what you're saying. No, yeah, I know you didn't make $1 million on the first one, and you caught him. You know what? Thinking along those lines, do you have any plans to record tape, stand up, or actually, any of your shows?
I think the show is going to go live, not live, but I think we're going to maybe put stuff up online this year.
Oh, wow.
Because we have a lot of tape. We've recorded a lot of stuff. We were thinking of putting cameras into the theater, but the theater's not into it that much, so we may not do that. But we have a lot of tape of the shows. But I probably am going to make a CD this year, but it's not going to be of my act. It'll be a separate CD because my act, I think if you just recorded it, you wouldn't understand 90% of it because it's a lot of visual stuff, you know?
It is.
The magic thing would be absurd.
It'd be a little hard.
Just a CD. So maybe that's what I should do is a whole CD of silent magic.
That's silent
people
magic.
Just laughing and floating.
That would be a first. The real Houdini seance CD with silent magic.
Right. And the magic would be getting people to pay for it.
That's always a little magic involved there.
Yes.
I tell you, it's crazy. I want to talk about a little bit about the Tomorrow Show again. I went to one, and you had a fella who said that he had been involved at CBS as an executive. And we stood up on the stage over there. I think it's before one of the bits. No spoilers with the shoes. And he was funny. And then you had a guy who had an East European accent, and he was a magician. And he ended up one night being tied to a chair because he promised that he would be able to escape artists his way out of the chair. And he was tied up and gagged and taped. And you gave the audience, we gave him some time, and you gave us a count. And, we gave him more time and so forth. And do you think you'll have this magician back again, if you remember who I'm talking about?
Well, the funny thing is I've done so many shows. That must have been a long time ago, and I don't remember it.
Oh, it doesn't. Okay.
I really don't remember that, and I think I would remember that.
Oh, sorry about
that.
And
you sure it was my show, right?
Yes. I remember it was midnight, and I was sober. And it was hilarious because obviously he was having a hard time getting out of the chair, and we all counted from 1 to 100, and then you said, "Well, we have another chance to count down again from 99 down." And of course, you said, "Well, you will get back to you," and the show went on, and he continued to struggle in the background. I'm sorry, you don't remember.
Yes, I do remember that.
Do you?
Obviously, it was a joke.
Most definitely. And I think
convincing one apparently for you.
It was. And the funny thing I found was that it was either the cat lady or another lady, scantily clad, that walked in front of him, and he completely stopped struggling and started staring at her her rear end. And he just to heck with the whole escape artist thing. I've got better things to watch. So he was still tied up at the end of the show, by the way. If you remember that.
Right. Oh, sure. Of course. Yeah, I do remember that. I can't remember who that was.
Oh.
I mean, I think it was me with one of our regular performers.
Yeah. Yeah.
We have like a regular cast of idiots that do stuff.
Ah, because I know I've seen, people come back. And I've always liked that. I always liked a troupe that you can, come back and see again in various incarnations. You must be quite a night owl to have that show at that time of the evening, and I like it. I personally like, knowing that I don't have to be there until midnight, and
right.
It gives a person a lot to do between then and midnight on Saturday.
I have to pace myself. I mean, I have to stay up late Friday night to try to pace myself for that Saturday a little bit. But Yeah, I don't mind it at all. I think over the 10 years of the show, I think I've been really tired five or six times.
Yeah, you look look.
Where I remember just thinking, I really don't want to be here.
There are a couple of
but you know what? The show must go on.
As always, that's the showbiz faithful, biblical.
Yes,
the whole.
It's a fun show, though. I enjoy doing the show, and
it's a
blast. I don't really perform on the show. I just host the show and enjoy it myself, really.
I consider that a performance in of itself. But
Have you ever seen the Crapshoot show we do?
That I don't recall myself. Not that title. Is that?
Well, it's a show that actually came about when Thursday night I still hadn't booked anybody because I was busy. I just told the guy that makes the posters for me, Steve Robles. I said, "Look, why don't you let's do this? Just write Crapshoot Surprise. Everybody will be surprised, and I'll get this booked by Saturday because we had to get promotional stuff out."
Yeah.
And it was allowed to be called Crapshoot, and it was one of the most popular shows, and it still is. I love it because everything that's going to happen on the show goes into a hat on a slip of paper.
Okay.
And so it's half acts. Half of the things, describe what act is going to come up, and half of the slips of paper are other things, like some of them say audience talents, and then we have an announcer in the back describing what that means. I say, okay, what does that mean, Bill? And they go, that means that person has to perform some kind of talent, or they'll say that person has to pick somebody else in the audience to do a talent. Like that variation can happen. So and there's also prizes. We give out crappy prizes, things I basically want to get rid of. Let's see, prizes, and it's just happening. It's weird things. Like we say, nothing will happen for 30 seconds, and if something happens, we're going to start counting over again. Which, of course, begs people yelling stuff out or interrupting the 30 seconds of silence, you know?
Sure.
But it's a crazy show, and I'm in the audience the whole time with a microphone. The audience pulls a slip out, and they read the slip of paper. So the audience does all the hosting, basically.
Oh, that's great.
It's pretty fun.
That sounds hilarious. I gotta go to one of those.
We're doing it on the 30th.
Ah, the 30th. Very good. Well, everyone out there, and that is at the Steve Allen Theater, right?
It's at the Steve Allen Theater, yeah, in the CFI building.
CFI building.
Right on Hollywood Boulevard.
Is it Vermont?
Down by.
I mean, not Vermont.
Near Vermont. It's two blocks short of Vermont.
It's near the Frank Lloyd. Yeah. I always say it's catty corner to the Frank Lloyd Wright, the house there in the park. That the Frank Lloyd Wright house?
Right, the Barnsdale Park.
Barnsdale Park, yeah.
It's across the street from Barnsdale Park.
Yeah. That's where it is, folks, and they're great shows. It's funny, there was a mic that a lady had on Sunset at Charlie Chaplin's house, and you probably know this, where it is.
Uh-huh.
I didn't. It's catty corner to the Chateau Marmont Hotel. Did you know that, Ron? Because I think you must be a Charlie Chaplin fan.
I've heard of this, but I've never seen it. I never actually went there and pointed it out to myself.
Ah, yeah, it's like I said, it's across the street from the Chateau Marmont. You know the famous. They have ghosts.
And on Sunset.
Yes, sir. On Sunset, as you cross North Crescent Heights, and just. As you get toward Chateau Marmont Hotel, it's right there, and it goes by the name, some French name called the Van Cluse House, which is some reference, which alludes me to Charlie Chaplin. But that is where he lived, and it's a historical place. And I hope they don't tear it. No, they wouldn't dare tear that down. They're always tearing things down in Los Angeles. It irks me.
They have to. There's not enough things. There's not enough floors or whatever the building is.
That's a good point.
They must have more than five floors, otherwise the building goes.
That's true. And because they don't want us to see the wonderful Hollywood Hills anymore and the Hollywood sign, you have to get an apartment, a high-rise, like you said, at least five floors in order to see the Hollywood sign.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know what to do about this.
Yeah, it's weird. I live on Bronson, and it's like right up the block from me. And,
cool. Bronson. That's a great street.
It's a pretty cool area. It's right around the corner from the UCB Theater.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's a great area.
I thought of moving a few times, and it's just like such a great location.
Oh, that's fantastic. You can even go across the street.
I was in the parking lot of Gelson's there. It was the Mayfair at the time, and I'm sitting on the wall waiting for a friend of mine to pick me up. And this car stops in front of me, pulls into the driveway of the supermarket. People get out of the car and started taking pictures of me.
Oh.
And I went, how could they possibly know anything about me and why are they taking pictures of me? And, of course, what they're doing is they're taking pictures of the Hollywood sign, which is right above my head. And that was when I thought, well, maybe I do have an ego. I must be an idiot.
Oh, showbiz. No, they might very well have been taking a picture of you with the Hollywood sign, you know, as a local.
That's what they were doing.
You know.
Yes.
You never know.
Thank you, Alan.
You're welcome. I don't know why I wrote this silly thing. I say, are there aliens or alien comedians hiding here on Earth? I'm just throwing that out as who knows.
What does that mean?
That's what I'm trying to figure out. I don't know why I brought it up. I thought you'd help me out in improv or something, but forget it. It's a bit I'll manage to develop either.
Everything's, I'm going to say no.
Yeah, that's a good answer. That's a good answer. What else I was going to have you interrogate you more? Talking about, are there any parts of the city that that you like and could talk about as far as like a link to comedy? Like, for example, the Bat Cave. You know, the Bat Cave is near where you live.
It's up the block on Bronson in the park up there, yeah. It's up on Canyon, Canyon Road. What was it called? Canyon something over the road.
Yes.
Right, parallel to me.
That's what I'm talking about. Yeah.
It looks pretty cool. I haven't been up there in years. It's so funny. I used to go up there a lot. I haven't been up there in a long time.
Well, you know what? It's all nostalgia, and I don't blame you. You're a busy man. Why would you be looking for the Bat Cave? And I just brought that up as a historical point of interest that you happen to live by.
Pretty cool.
It's very cool.
I think if I had people visiting more, I would probably wind up there. I think Griffith Observatory is always a target for me to bring people.
Oh, that's a great.
Because you can see the whole city, and it's pretty cool.
That is gorgeous. You know, I am a Los Angeles aficionado. I love this city. I have relatives that live in New York City, and I don't mind visiting New York. But you're from back east, aren't you, originally?
Yeah, I'm from New York. I was born in Queens, grew up on Long Island, and went to college in upstate New York.
Very good. So, do you like this climate? You've obviously grown accustomed to becoming an Angeleno. Do you miss New York?
Well, I've slowly moved to a warmer place. except when I went from upstate New York to Boston, and Boston was pretty cold. Mm-hmm. Went back to Manhattan for a while, then went to San Francisco, which in my mind was California, going to be really warm. But I lived out in the Richmond district, and it was near the ocean. It was always really cool. And I remember one day it being 80 degrees, and I said to my roommate, yeah, 80 degrees, California weather. And he said, you're not going to see another 80-degree weather day for 5 years at least. And he was right. It was never that hot again. It was just weird.
Yeah.
But you're out towards the ocean there. You can look down like one of the main streets, and you can see the sun in San Francisco, like downtown. You can see the sun shining down there. But where you were, it was overcast all the time. Great city. I mean, I had to leave that city because things weren't happening there. And I kept traveling on the 5 from San Francisco to L.A. to come down here and audition, do shows.
Sure, sure.
You can only make that trip so many times before you go, all right, I'm going to move.
Yeah, no, it's quite a haul. It's quite a drive. And
and not that interesting.
You know, it's funny. That's exactly what my sister said. She came out to visit. She says, oh, we're going to take – I've never taken that drive. And she said, oh, I don't know what all the hullabaloo is about this. And I said, what do you mean? There's a Hearst Castle and all of that. Oh, we didn't stop for that. What is the Winchester house and all of this? And I said, God, I'd stop at all those things and maybe say hello to Clint Eastwood or something up there. Maybe he's a little off the beaten path there.
Well, the one is great.
Yes.
Traveling down the one is great. It takes forever. If you were going from San Francisco to L.A., that'd be crazy. But it also would be very scenic. The one is great. But the 5, not so great. It's the fastest way.
Okay.
If you want to do a lot of thinking, it's probably a great drive.
not
to be alone with yourself for 5 hours.
Oh, we all have been there. in the car, sometimes out of the car, in your apartment. But this is a Pat question, so I like talking just like we're talking like this. Here's a Pat question for you. What makes you laugh today, and who were some of your comedic influences growing up? That's one of those magazine things.
Wow. Well, you know, I don't know. It's a tough question for me anyway, asking, was it who makes me laugh or what makes me laugh? Those are two different things, I think. But yeah, I think what makes me laugh now, because I've seen so much comedy, is something that's really different, something that's really kind of weird.
Sure.
You know?
Sure.
But weird in the sense that it's not for the sake of being weird. It's just really creative and something really different to me. So in other words, it surprises me. It surprises me and makes me laugh. I mean, that's one of the. Stalwarts of comedy is surprise. And I saw a show the other night, and I rarely sit in the audience. I have a hard time watching a comedy show. I mean, torture to me is sitting in the first two rows of a stand-up show. I think because I've seen so much of it,
sure.
I have a hard time being that person.
Sure.
I have to be in the back of the room. But you'll find that, I think, about most comics. I saw a show, and a lot of the guys are on my show Saturday.
Yeah.
It's this guy, Matthew Silver, and this guy, Special Head.
Yeah.
And they're all weird and funny. I mean, it's just, you go, wow. I mean, you it's definitely in a form that you have not seen before. And it's definitely going to surprise you what they do, because I have no idea what they're going to do, in a sense. Speaking of magic, Special Head does a bunch of magic stuff.
Yeah.
And he acts kind of philosophical on stage and very zen-like, and makes these weird things happen. And they're pretty great. Levitating feathers. He levitates himself. He was on America's Got Talent, too, actually.
Uh-huh.
I think both of them were, somehow. I don't know how that would happen. And he did a thing where Howard Stern was just making fun of him constantly. He said, all right, well, do what you're going to do. And he took this stick, and he just held the stick down and then proceeded to just raise his legs into a loop position in midair. It was pretty crazy, and the crowd went bananas.
Well, that's funny.
Pretty great. Anyway, he's on the show Saturday. That show is just super weird and pretty great. And I had these guys booked for Saturday as well, so I'm looking forward to it.
Oh, that sounds great. I'm gonna try.
But yeah, and it's not necessarily laughing either. I mean, it's like, wow, you know, what the F?
Yeah, yeah.
Holy mackerel. A good sketch will make me laugh. A good sketch and really good actors, you know, good comedy actors are great, you know. And there's a lot of them in this town.
A lot. The whole comedy scene, it's building to, I think there's going to be I don't want to say dominant, but it's going to be quite a tourist attraction in this town to have legendary troops, just like when you started. You know, how you said you did that two-hour sketch. I want that to come back. It is coming back. It is coming back. UCB?
Well, sure. UCB, Groundlings have sketch shows.
Groundlings has sketch shows.
Everyone thinks they're just pure improv, but no, they do. They have sketch shows. Though I'm saying that, and I don't know how many years I've been here. I think I've been to the Groundlings theater twice because people I knew were in a show. I'm not drawn to that, I guess.
As far as improv shows that are or sketch.
One was like they have a graduation show after people take. It's a sketch show. Sketch writing workshops and stuff, and actors. I mean, they're all actors who wrote the sketches, and they're in the sketches. And I can't think of her name, but she was in this graduation show that a friend of mine was in, and Nadine Pierce. She's on. She was on Saturday Night Live first. Okay.
Oh.
I'm stepping on my own foot.
No,
do you know what I'm talking about?
You know what? I don't.
But anyway, she went on to go on to Saturday Night Live within 6 months of that show, you know, so.
Oh.
And I think Groundlings is a great training ground. I think people do look for actors there. And UCB. UCB is great now.
Yes. Yes. It's a standalone. It's doing very well. In fact, I read that their classes are so full that there's like this waiting list people that, you know, we've talked about. You mentioned earlier about how some people start out making a couple of jokes at their job, and then they realize it's a little bit different after class and before class. But that is what it is. And yeah, man. Any thoughts on Houdini? I'm not
on what?
On Houdini. I know you didn't know him personally. But
Houdini, phenomenal. I mean, he's bigger than life. The guy was insanely bigger than life.
Totally.
He did. You know, he did like a serial, a silent film Serial, where he was like the hero.
I do know that.
And it would be just like cliffhangers where he would be trapped in something, and it looked like he was going to die, and then the next episode of the Serial, he would get out of the thing.
Yes.
And he wanted to act, so he talked people into making this Serial about him being this hero. And I know all this because I showed a couple at my show once, and this guy, Michael Mortilla, who's a great piano player, and he plays professionally for silent movies and everything. In fact, he's on Sunday.
Was he Michael at the
Mortilla
New Year's
show? Playing, what's that?
Was he at the New Year's show?
He was playing piano for the New Year's show.
Oh, he's fantastic. Yes, go on.
He's great.
Go on. You were saying that he...
I've seen him sit down for a like one-hour-long silent movie that he told me he has never seen before, and he'll compose music as he's watching the thing.
Oh.
And you know, with silent movies, you tend to have like a theme. You theme a character, you play to something else, but he created a whole soundtrack to that movie in that hour on the spot.
On the spot.
Which is insane to me, but he's that good. And what he's doing, Sunday at LACMA, he is playing for 9 hours straight.
Oh, my.
He's playing for five movies, and I think they're all silent movies, and he's just playing in a space at LACMA for 9 hours for these five movies.
Wow.
And he gets, obviously he must get breaks, he gets like 10-minute breaks, but yeah, that's crazy. And he's trying to get the Guinness World Book of Records too, in spite of that. I mean, that's not why he's doing it. It's really an art installation type of thing.
I would,
but,
yeah, my God.
Definitely going to that.
You're going to be at that, right?
I'm going to go to that at some point, yeah.
Yeah, that sounds fantastic. Many years ago, it must have been 10 years ago, I saw, it might have been him, they were doing one of those big refurbishing historical things with one of the theaters downtown. I forget the name of the theater, one of those very ornate Baroque.
Sure, yeah, the Last Seat Standing, or Last...
Yeah,
what was it called?
So, yeah, and you know all the you know the glitzy wealthy people that are, and I you know, again, I want to save these buildings. I'm all for that, and they did Phantom of the Opera, and they announced that the piano player would be doing just that, playing through the whole Phantom of the Opera, and I was amazed at that because you know when that sound hits you right there, especially if you're seated close to the orchestra, and it doesn't really matter. It's you get the orchestration and the sound and the you know, it's all synchronized. It's a mind blower. You know,
it's pretty exciting. I mean, I became totally hooked on silent movies about, oh, I don't know, it was before I moved here in San Francisco.
Yeah,
and Michael Mortilla was playing piano at the time at this festival, but it's a silent movie festival, the San Francisco Silent Movie Festival that happens every year in like June or July.
Yeah.
And they started out with like a day and a half, and now they're up to like 4 days of silent movies with I think about six or seven different kinds of accompaniment.
Wow.
There's a piano player, there's another piano player who plays piano and flute and trumpet while he's playing piano, like they'll play with his left hand. He's amazing. And there's like a small ensemble from Sweden, I think, that plays. Anyway,
nice.
It's just great. And people go, silent movies. But the acting is great. It's not over the top like you would expect.
No, it's not.
And the music is great. It's live music.
Yeah.
It's, everything has live music to it.
I mean, it's like, you could call it a silent happening. Because it is.
Yeah.
It's all, you know.
And I do, I'm the announcer for the thing now. I do all the announcing.
Oh, great.
For the films and stuff. So I get to see everything for free.
Yeah,
I do all the announcing and the giveaway prizes sometimes. I welcome people to the theater. It's so funny because I'm the voice of the Silent Film Festival.
That's fantastic. That's fantastic. Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm jealous. I like noir films, you know, all the black and white stuff with the cops and the L.A. and the whole sleazy dark side of Los Angeles that, you know, it's just not too hard to find even today sometimes.
Right.
again, you know, it's this ethos of mood and music that is not accented today the way it was then. And, you know, it's such an art form, and they approached it in an artsy manner, no matter what the budget. And we can talk about Ed Woods. And, oh, by the way, some company has bought on Santa Monica Boulevard Ed Woods' studio. And the guy's a film freak, and he wants to refurbish it just as it was when Ed Woods was there. Are you an Ed Woods fan?
Yeah.
I thought
you refurbish it so people can come in and look at it and see what it looked like.
Yeah,
or
yeah.
Try to reuse it that way.
No. I don't think. I think he wants people to come in and maybe he'll have a bar involved, but he's going to put everything the way it was, as so he promises. But I think there'll be
right.
There'll be beverages, you know, so you can.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. See, that's that thing that's happening, man, and. You know, you and I can appreciate that. I know that some people don't even know what we're talking about sometimes about this stuff. But, you know, I think it's catching on. So that, you know, the history of L.A. is enmeshed with showbiz. And you being a showbiz person and I involved in showbiz in some ways not, can appreciate
right.
that. It's 'cause the freeways, I think the freeways are not that exciting. I came up here today on the bus, and I was just thinking, oh, God, I don't have to deal with road rage. And that was quite a trip. I took the train. Have you used a Metro Rail?
Yeah, I don't have a car right now, and I love taking the transit here.
Ditto.
You know, occasionally you'll find a weird guy on the bus, or it might be something uncomfortable, but, you know, then what's the other option? You're avoiding any of that stuff.
Well, yes.
And the trains are great. The trains are great. They're fast.
Oh, my God.
Not enough people use them.
No. And so clean.
But they're adding to the trains. I mean, they're going to be going directly to the airport soon, right? And
Yes.
There's another train that they're building out towards Pasadena. There's one that already goes there, but there's one that they're extending past Pasadena, maybe? I can't remember. I don't have the details in my head.
Well, you know, some of these routes existed back in the day with the red cars. And they're just kind of like painting by number what they took out, and they're putting it back in.
Where are you from?
Oh, I'm from Houston, Texas. I was born in New York City. I graduated University of Houston with a history English degree. And got bored and said got my Screen Actors Guild card. And came out here and got my Screen Actors Guild card and got my Screen Actors Guild card. And I like to look at it sometimes. I'm going to frame it.
And you've been paying into it every year.
Yes, I've taken a leave of absence, a voluntary leave of absence.
Oh, yeah, until smart.
Thank you.
Smart.
I was so superstitious. I said, God, maybe I'll never get back in again. You know, what if they forget my number or something? But I am planning on returning the Great Return.
I'm always behind in dues around now, and I never get the screeners for the SAG Awards, and I'm all paid up because I happen to be doing a few cartoons in December.
Fantastic!
So
good for you. Yeah, I know you're talking
better than getting screeners.
You mean you're talking about that when they have the awards and they send you the stuff, they either send it to you in the mail. Is that what you're talking about, the DVDs of the crew?
Yeah.
Crop of,
I mean, a lot of the movies you don't want to see on a small screen, but the flip side is that it's free.
Sure. A few of them that you don't want to see at all.
Exactly.
And then they have the screenings, you know, where you can go out, they give you the tickets, and you walk up to the ticket booth and say, I'm a member. And they say, a member of what? The SAG. And that's nice. It really is. And they let you in.
And they've done everything to prevent any kind of piracy, too. They claim that every DVD is marked with your code so that if for some reason I let one of these DVDs leak out into the world, they figure it out that I'm the one that did it. And I'd be put in jail for 35 years.
No, it's like, I think they have, that's like Interpol, the CIA, the FBI, and some agencies that we don't even know about will hunt you down.
Yeah,
like that the tag on your mattress or your pillowcase. you tear that off and it's over. Ron, this young lady is making strange signals to me, which it's like kind of like the light. Let me tell you, sir, this has been a hoot, and I get to call my mom tonight and tell her that I had Ron Lynch on, and tell her all about this.
And she'll go, ooh?
Yeah, I'll tell her about Nana the Catwoman. So I don't know. Thank you so much, Ron, and I will be seeing you in the near future. Probably about 72 hours. I'll swing by. And
please come see my show.
Yes,
don't forget my show.
I shall.
Every
indeed.
Saturday at midnight.
Yes, everybody, that's Ron Lynch, and he has a show there at the Steve Allen Theater right there on Hollywood Boulevard, right across from the Frank Lloyd Wright Barnsdale House. Midnight, ladies and gentlemen. It's a late show, BYOB, fantastic. And again, thank you so much, Ron, and we'll be talking very soon.
Sure. I have no problem. I loved it.
Thank you, sir.
Have fun. Thank you.
Good night.
Okay. Bye.
Bye. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we're about to wrap it up, and as you heard, that was Ron Lynch. And again, this is another amazing part of the comedy scene, and we hoped you all enjoyed this. I certainly did, and I hope you got something out of it. He's incredible, and who knows? We might find some ghosts out there at the Queen Mary or up in the hills up there on Bronson Avenue, the Bat Cave. Now, this man really helped me out in telling me what improv and sketch comedy is. For those of you out there, improv is where the audience gets stuff thrown at them and you throw it back at the group and they act it out. And sketch comedy is where, it's rehearsed and set up. You can Wikipedia that. So anyway, that's it, ladies and gentlemen. This is Alan Lee, and come back.
Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Razor Riffs with Keith Razor and Alan Lee, right here on LA Talk Radio.